All right, get ready for a deep dive, everybody. We're going right into the thick of Minnesota family law with a case that really shook things up, Pakula v. Pakula. Back in 1985, this Minnesota Supreme Court ruling really changed the game when it comes to custody decisions.
Yeah, this case is super interesting because it brought this whole primary caretaker doctrine into the spotlight. Like, it forced everyone to seriously think about which parent is really carrying the load in a child's life, you know, especially when a couple decides to split.
Right. It's like the court was saying, hey, let's stop making assumptions and actually look at who's been doing the real work of parenting. The diaper changes, the meals, all that daily stuff. And there's a whole lot of drama behind this legal battle, too. We're talking about Kelly Joe and Dana David Pakula, a young couple married as teenagers with two daughters who end up in this pretty intense custody fight.
And this case is really crucial for law students to understand. It raises these really big questions about what's truly best for a kid in these tough situations.
So let's set the scene here. Kelly and Dana tied the knot back in 1980. Kelly was just 17 and Dana was 20. Teenage marriage. I mean, that's got to come with its own set of challenges, right?
Oh, absolutely. And then you add two little girls to the mix. You know, it just shows how life doesn't always follow a neat and tidy plan.
Exactly. It's not like reading a law textbook. So you have these young parents trying to make it work, but things start falling apart. And this is where that primary caretaker idea comes in. Kelly ends up being the one taking care of those girls' needs day in and day out. Dana was working split shifts as a truck driver, so he wasn't around as much.
And this raises such an important question. How do you actually measure a parent's contribution when their lives are so different? Dana was out working to provide for his family, but Kelly was holding down the fort at home, making sure those kids were cared for.
It's a tough question, for sure. And to make things even more complicated, Kelly and Dana both had their own struggles. Kelly was dealing with a bit of a temper, and Dana was battling alcohol abuse and sometimes being verbally aggressive. So, you know, neither one was a perfect parent.
It really complicates things, right? Because the whole idea of parental fitness rarely has a simple answer.
Totally. And get this, the initial trial court actually awarded custody to Dana.
I know, it seems kind of surprising at first, right? Especially since Kelly was the main caretaker. But the trial court really focused on the idea that Dana's extended family could provide more stability and support.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if they were missing the bigger picture. Like, were they so fixated on this idea of external stability that they ignored what was really happening in those little girls' lives? But thankfully, the Court of Appeals stepped in and said, hold on a second. They reversed that decision.
And that's what brought the case to the Minnesota Supreme Court. You had this disagreement between the lower courts, so it had to go to the highest court to get sorted out.
High stakes, right. And now there's this huge legal question looming. Did the trial court make a mistake by putting so much emphasis on the father's family instead of those crucial best interest factors that are supposed to guide custody cases?
Well, the Minnesota Supreme Court's answer was a clear yes. They basically said the trial court messed up.
And for any law students listening, this is a major point. The Supreme Court is saying you can't just pick and choose the facts you like and ignore the rest.
Right. It's a lesson in legal reasoning and applying the law fairly.
Okay, so break this down for me. What did the Supreme Court actually say, and why was their decision such a big deal?
They basically made it clear that custody should usually go to the primary caretaker, unless there's strong evidence that they are unfit. And this is the big thing. This ruling essentially established the primary caretaker doctrine in Minnesota law.
So they were basically saying, let's be practical. The parent who's been there every day taking care of the child's needs should usually get custody. And they really emphasized how important it is for kids to have that continuous care.
And what's interesting is they use psychological research and expert opinions to support their reasoning. They weren't just making this up.
That's important. It shows they were serious about making a well-informed decision and understanding the impact on children. But there's something else that's fascinating here. They didn't just disagree with the trial court. They actually criticized them for ignoring some pretty important advice.
You're talking about the three social workers who evaluated the family and all recommended that Kelly should get custody. The Supreme Court basically called the trial court out for ignoring those professional opinions.
It's almost like the trial court had already made up their mind and were just trying to find evidence to support their idea of what a stable family should look like. And the Supreme Court wasn't having it.
Right. They were making a point. You can't ignore the facts, especially when it comes to something as important as a child's well-being. We've been talking about this landmark case, Piccola v. Piccola, and it's pretty clear that it really changed the way custody battles were handled in Minnesota.
Right. It's like a wake-up call to the courts, like, hey, let's focus on what's actually best for the kids.
Yeah.
But this whole primary caretaker idea brings up some interesting questions, especially when we think about how families are different these days.
Yeah, for sure. We're seeing more and more families where both parents are sharing the parenting responsibilities pretty equally. So how does this doctrine, which seems to favor one parent, work when caregiving is more balanced?
That's what I'm wondering. Like, does it create a bias? Is it a disadvantage for a parent who maybe works longer hours, but is still a loving and involved parent?
Well, that's where things get a little tricky. Remember, this doctrine isn't about punishing parents or forcing people into old-fashioned gender roles. It's about making sure the child has stability and consistency.
So it's not like the courts are automatically saying mom gets custody or dad gets custody just because of some stereotype. They're looking at each family individually.
Exactly. And when both parents are genuinely sharing those caregiving responsibilities in a balanced way, the courts will definitely take that into account.
So those Garska factors we talked about earlier, those really matter here, right? The courts would look at who's doing the cooking, cleaning, doctor appointments, homework help, all those everyday things.
Absolutely. If those tasks are being shared pretty equally, then the primary caretaker idea might not be as important. It becomes more complicated.
It seems like this doctrine, even though it was groundbreaking, needs to be flexible. You can't just force every family into the same mold.
That's a really important point for anyone studying law. Legal doctrines give us a framework, but they're not supposed to be rigid rules. You have to apply them to real-world situations, and real life is messy.
Okay, we've talked about shared parenting, but what about those other best interest factors,
Yeah.
like financial stability? Does focusing so much on the primary caretaker mean those other things get ignored?
That's a good question, and it's something people worry about. But remember, the primary caretaker doctrine is just one part of the whole picture. The courts still have to look at all those factors in the law when they're making these custody decisions.
So it's not like they just check off primary caretaker and that's it. They're really digging into the situation and considering all the different pieces.
Right, it's like a balancing act. They have to look at everything. The child's age, the parent's mental and physical health, the quality of the relationships, any history of domestic violence or abuse. It's a lot to consider.
No wonder family law is so complex. There are so many factors involved.
It definitely keeps things interesting, and this is where having a good lawyer who really knows family law can make a huge difference. They can help you navigate all of this and make sure your rights are protected.
So for our listeners who are studying law, this case is a great example of some key concepts, right? Like how trial courts have to be really careful and thorough when they're applying the law.
Absolutely. Piccola v. Piccola reminds us that those best interest factors are incredibly important. They have to be carefully considered and applied correctly.
It's a lesson in how to be a good judge. Do your homework and make sure your decisions are based on the law and the evidence.
And it also shows the role of those higher courts, the appellate courts. They're there to make sure things are done fairly and the law is being followed.
So to any future lawyers out there, pay attention. Details matter, evidence matters, and understanding how case law and statutes work together is super important.
Couldn't agree more.
Now, I know we've been focusing on the legal side of this case, but let's not forget about the people involved. These are real families, real children, whose lives are being affected by these decisions.
That's so important to remember. These aren't just abstract legal arguments. They have real-world consequences. We have to approach these cases with compassion and understanding.
It's a reminder that every case file represents a story, a family going through a tough time.
And that brings us back to the Piccola family. We know the Supreme Court sent the case back to the trial court, but what happened to Kelly, Dana, and their two daughters? Do we know?
Yeah, I'm curious too. Did Kelly end up getting custody? Did the trial court follow the Supreme Court's instructions? And what about those little girls? What happened to them?
Well, unfortunately, the court records don't tell us much about what happened in the end, but we do know the Supreme Court felt very strongly about the primary caretaker doctrine, and they sent the case back with very specific instructions. So it seems like they really wanted to make sure things were fair for those children.
It gives you hope, right? Even in the legal system, there's a chance for justice and for decisions that are truly in the best interests of children.
Wow. We've really gotten into the weeds with Piccolo v. Piccola today, huh? From the little details of the case itself to the big impact it had on custody law in Minnesota, this case has given us a lot to chew on.
It really has, and it's such a valuable case for law students to study.
Mm-hmm.
It shows how legal thinking changes over time, how tough it can be to apply these legal ideas to real life, and how crucial it is to fight for what's truly best for kids.
Yeah, for sure. But before we wrap up, I want to go back to something we talked about before, this idea that the primary caretaker doctrine, while it has good intentions, might not always be the perfect answer. What are some of the problems with this approach? Like, where could it fall short? That's a great question, and it reminds us that the law isn't always black and white. One concern is that if you apply the primary caretaker rule too strictly, it could actually lead to unfair results in some cases.
Okay, can you give me an example? Like, how would that actually play out for a family?
Sure. Imagine a parent who, maybe because of their job or other things going on in their life, hasn't been able to be there for every bedtime or every doctor's appointment, but they're still a really important, loving part of their child's life.
So a parent who might not fit that traditional primary caretaker image, but is still really involved with their kid, just maybe in different ways.
Yeah, exactly. And a strict interpretation of the primary caretaker doctrine might not give enough weight to what that parent contributes. It could even end up separating a child from someone who's really important to them.
That would be awful, yeah. Especially if that parent is totally fit and wants to be a part of raising their kid. It seems like you really need to be flexible and understand each family's specific situation.
It's a good point. The primary caretaker doctrine is just one factor to consider in a custody case. The main goal should always be to create a parenting plan that's truly in the best interests of the child. And that might not always mean going with whoever was the primary caregiver in the past.
It's about finding that balance.
Right.
Recognizing that stability and consistency are important for the kid, but also making sure both parents can have a meaningful role in their child's life, even if things weren't perfectly equal before.
It's definitely a balancing act. It takes good communication, a willingness to compromise, and always putting the child's needs first.
Well said. I think that's the perfect note to end on. This deep dive into Piccola v. Piccola has been really eye-opening in so many ways. We've explored how custody law works, how legal thinking evolves, and the real human impact of these cases.
It's been great to join you for this conversation, and I hope our listeners have found it as interesting and thought-provoking as we have.
And to our listeners, especially those of you who are future lawyers, keep digging into these issues, keep asking questions, and keep fighting for approaches that put children's well-being first. That's what really matters. Thanks for joining us today.